Stories of people whose faith has been tested, renewed, and sometimes discovered in the face of real-life situations. Faith in the real world.
When I first saw him, I remember saying that there's something not right with this guy.
It was a little scary.
He seemed to be like a redneck.
He was walking kind of fast, his head was kind of down, pacing back and forth.
I was hoping for at least 200 or more, dead, injured.
You know, he thought he was doing the right thing.
He was at war with Muslims in his mind.
When I tell people this story, they tell me that they don't believe me.
He found faith and kindness in the most unlikely place. And today he shares how his life was transformed by the people who he was preparing to destroy. Please welcome Richard Mack McKinney.
And if you need it, here's some water.
Well, once again, Mac, you go by Mac. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Thanks for the time that you've given this morning. And like we did in the last service, I want to just start with your background, where you grew up. What was life like growing up? And what led you to go into the military?
Okay, yeah. Thank you all for having me. I'm so happy and blessed to be here. I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. I was a poor kid, grew up on welfare, food stamps. To this day, I will not eat a grilled cheese sandwich. Hand me a grilled cheese sandwich, I'm going to throw it at you. I'm just saying. And I was actually part of, when I was in elementary school, I was actually part of desegregation. Because I grew up in a poor neighborhood, which happened to be a neighborhood of color. I remember it gave me a different kind of perspective growing up towards different races. I never graduated. I got involved in drugs when I was a teenager. And I ran away from home when I was 17 and did not come back until I had graduated boot camp. I had to come back with something to show, right? Like I said, I'd never graduated high school. I have 2 degrees now, though, so I guess that kind of negates that. The military was a way out for me. Because of what I was doing at the time, what I was involved with at the time, had two endings. That's why I try to tell young people, the gangster lifestyle, there's no 401k plan, man, okay? Dead or prison, that's your retirement plan, that's it. And I didn't want that, so I joined the military. And of course, having a problem with authority, I joined the Marine Corps. Not my better decision, but I was happy with it. I ended up falling in love with it, and it became my family. And it just grew from there.
So you go into the military. It's kind of life-saving for you at that point. And you're learning about authority. You're learning about commitment to others. There's good in it. I mean, at this point, it seems like there's nothing but good. And then what, in your military career, what did that look like? What were things you were doing? What's happening to you during that time?
Well, I made a place for myself. I found a talent. I became good at things. None of them, by the way, are transferable to the civilian world. So they didn't do me a lot of good on the outside. But I became good at things. And I was recognized for it. And I had made myself a destiny. We all know we don't choose our own destinies, but at that point I didn't. I figured I know everything, right? And my destiny was to die in combat. And a lot of people might be put aback by that a little bit. But you have to understand where I was from. In this country, if you die in combat, you come back in a flag-draped coffin, you are forever a hero. Nobody can take that away from you. Nobody. That was what I was shooting for. That's what I wanted. That's where I saw myself. And the military was going to give that to me.
So coming back as a dead hero looked a lot more promising than just living. What was going on in the military? You were in combat situations. You were having to do some hard stuff. Share a word about that.
So, you know, I more or less had the opportunity. Didn't necessarily, I mean, it might have looked like I was trying to, you know, take myself out, but never happened. I put myself in some very, very harsh situations, and I'd always come out. I'd always come out of it. And at that point in my life, I was actually more of an atheist than anything, but I remember laying in the hospital after I'd come to, looking up at the ceiling and going, "Are you serious, man? I'm still here? Come on." You know? And all along, he was teaching me. He was building me. He was bringing me along for my true destiny, because it wasn't to die in combat.
You share in the documentary about beginning to realize a dissonance within your own self in what you were called to do in combat and shooting, killing. And something in you that's saying, wait a minute, this just sort of goes against my human inclination. And you went to a superior one day to kind of acknowledge this. What was the advice?
Yeah, so I was a corporal one time, and I'd already been put in situations where I had to neutralize targets. And it was weighing on me. I was like, man, why do I feel bad about this? I mean, I shouldn't feel bad, right? I mean, that's my job, and if I didn't do it to them, they were going to do it to me, right? I guess, right? So I went to a higher ranking NCO and asked him, I says, how do I deal with this? How do I put this into a perspective that I can work with? And he said, oh, okay. He said, you're on the range, aiming in, shooting at a target. Round goes down range, poof, through the paper it goes. That's it, done, over. Makes sense. Yeah.
Just look at people as targets.
Targets. We are not created with that mentality. I don't care how mad you get. I just laugh when people say, I'm gonna kill them. No, you're not. Because we're not made that way. Now, does it happen? Yes, it does. Because why? Because those people are broke. There's something not wired right, right? That people just go off on a tangent. And that's why the military is so harsh in boot camp. It's made that way because it has to rewire things to use you. Now, I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm not speaking derogatory about the military. I love the military, and they do a fine job. They do what they have to do in order to do the job they need to do when they're called upon. I get it, okay? But that's how it works. They have to rewire. They spent millions on psychological research on just how to do that.
Right.
You know?
Right. So you're sensing something deteriorating about your own humanity in this. Maybe you're not consciously thinking that way, but you're maybe just sensing something's not right. So now you're out of the military and you're living in Muncie, Indiana. What's going on with you now? What is your state of mind? What is your heart like? What's going on with you then?
Well, so I had been medically retired. I didn't touch on this before, but I've been medically retired because I was injured bad enough in Iraq to where they said, you got to go, man. You're over 20 years already, man. You got to go. I was mad because, wait a minute, I got a destiny. Hold on. Hold. Stop the train. It was taken away from me. I was mad at the government. I was mad at the military. And, of course, I was mad at Muslims because they're the ones that hurt me bad enough to get me kicked out of, I say kicked out of the military. Right? I was fired. Medically retired, but to me, I was fired. Right? They don't need me anymore. They don't want me. I felt lonely. I felt alone and lost in myself. You know, I turned to alcohol. That was a big one. I was up to drinking, what was it, half gallon of vodka every 2 days. Yeah. And during that time, I realized, hey, I got Muslims right here in Muncie. Let me go weed them out, get them all together, and then deal with them. Neutralize the target.
You're that angry, and Muslims are responsible, in your thinking, for any of the misery in your life. How did you come to target the Islamic Center, the mosque in Muncie? How did that community get on your radar?
So when I had looked into it just a little, I didn't put much effort into it because they weren't hiding, you know. I found out that their center, their mosque, their meeting place was in a residential neighborhood just off Ball State campus, just down one of residential street. And I went to go look at it, and okay, man, it was literally a house next to other houses. It was a neighborhood. I was like, okay, I'm gonna keep an eye on this, but I can't do nothing here because too much collateral damage. I might hurt Americans, right? That's what I was thinking. And then they moved, took over an office building that was kind of away from everything. I mean, there's some things that are close to it, but not that much. And I said, okay, here we go. So I found a location I wanted to set a bomb, and I began building a bomb. And this plan took around about 2 years. I took my time because, as I've learned through movies, you do something right away like that, red flags come up. I knew I would get caught in the end, but I didn't want to get caught before I was able to do it. So I took my time.
I was a little harsh earlier, but you kind of said, yeah. I said he was crazy but smart. You know,
no,
he had some weird stuff going on in that. How many of you right now are going, this is a scary dude? Like, oh my gosh, this is a scary dude. You've got a plan. You are patient. You are smart. And you are working to carry out something that would be the most horrific event in the history of Indiana. Yeah, what stopped you?
So my daughter was talking to me one day about this this Muslim child that was in her class, and her mom came to visit her, and her mom was like all dressed like a Muslim woman, and I blew up, and seeing the look on my face, knowing that my daughter didn't understand, because of course we are blessed to have children that are not born prejudiced. They don't have bias. Unfortunately, their parents teach them that, and the rest of society. So my daughter told me this, and I blew up. Absolutely blew up. She meant a lot to me. She still does, most of the time. She's 19 now, so yeah. You know. You feel my pain. I got you. Okay. I needed to find this tangible evidence. I knew I was right in my heart, but I needed to show them something. Because now I realize that you call me smart about planning, right? But I never took one moment to think this involves other people. It's just me. But then when I see my look on my daughter's face, I'm like, this does involve other people. I need to show them how evil these people are. So I take the opportunity to go to the Islamic Center, go to the source.
And you were, what were you expecting to find? What did you think you were going to find that would be evidence?
I didn't know. That was the thing. I wasn't sure. You know, I wasn't planning just to go in there and run out with something. I planned on this.
You just thought they were up to some kind of evil.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you go, you just like walk in the front door one day?
Literally. Walked in, was greeted by a gentleman, smiled at me and says, "Can I help you?" And I says, "Yeah." I says, I want you to teach me about Islam." He says, "Well, how long you got?" I said, "A couple hours." He said, "We'll give it a shot." And from there, I just went to just meeting people, and they hugged me, and they smiled at me. And Saba Barami actually sat at my feet. I was on a couch and sat at my feet and hugged my leg. Hugged my leg. You know, and as Americans especially, we're kind of like, you know, arms distance kind of people, right? This was just odd to me. I was like, man, this guy doesn't even know me. And then I found out he's a doctor. I'm nobody, right? I'm nobody. And this guy, a doctor, right? Hugging my leg, man. At my feet. Wow. So all the, you know, this is starting to register and stuff, but still, I know.
It's messing with you.
Yeah, because in a lot of ways, I felt like this was a cover-up. They're just being this way, just like, you know, trick me, right? And I sat and listened to their sermon. Wow. That was pretty nice. That was a good message, right? You know? They just said that because I'm here, right? That's what I thought. And then they hand me a Quran. And I tell Muslims this all the time, that if someone comes up to you and they want to learn about Islam, hand them a Quran and tell them to come back and find you when they got questions, right? And that's what they did. And I was like overjoyed. I'm like, I have the holy grail to evil in my hands and a promise to explain it to me. Whoa, this is great. I mean, that's what I'm thinking, right? And I did exactly that. I went home, I read the Quran, and I read it, and I read it, and I read it. And I would go back a lot. They were like, really, I was there a lot. Let's just put it that way. I come up with, okay, explain that one. And they would. But I didn't take their word for it. I would go back and research it myself, because back at that time, like, YouTube still had the bad videos up, you know, terrorists and all that stuff. And I would look at good sites and I would look at bad sites. I would look at pros and I would look at cons on what I was actually, the subject I was actually looking at. And as time went on, I noticed that all the cons and all the negativity and all the bad stuff that these people were talking about came because they hated. It came from a place of hatred. And after a while, I started to realize that everything these people are saying is not even intelligent. It's emotional. It's not intelligent, though, because they're not making any sense. And they're contradicting what I have proof to in my hands. I mean, you know, if it's wrote down, we you know, I often tell people, I've had jobs where if it's on paper, it's true. If it's not, it never happened. And here it is. So it started to change me.
So I find it interesting that you're doing a pretty intellectual research project now. You're reading, you're comparing, you're going back to the sites that motivated you before. Now you're having questions. And the whole reason you're doing this, you had already made up your mind. Mm-hmm. But the reason you're doing it now is because of love. You love your daughter. Mm-hmm. You did not want her to live the rest of her life being the daughter of a mass murderer. You at least wanted her to know, yeah, but my dad was a hero because he found something. And now your research is starting to mess with you, but that's not the only thing, is it? Uh-uh. It's the treatment you're receiving.
Absolutely. actions of the people. So I know, I know as church leaders, you talk about it a lot. I know you do. I've never been to one of your services till today. But, it, you know, within the religious faith, we always, you know, the leadership always tells its congregation about, don't talk the talk, walk the walk, right? Don't just say something, do something. Show me, right? Because I can sit here and talk to somebody all day long, but unless I can actually put those words into action, they fall on deaf ears. What I saw from the community in Muncie was people that were trying to live as best they could according to what this book is telling me. Just like Christians try to live as best they can according to what the Bible says. Right? And I'm thinking, okay, now hold on a second. This Islam thing. My impression of Islam was made by people shooting at me. Those guys. The ones that blew me out of a building. Those guys. And then I have these people. But I'm reading their book now. I'm reading their book, and I see what the book is telling me, and I see their actions, and I'm like, this is a better interpretation of Islam than that is. Whoa. So in saying that, I can't base Muslims on the action of those people. Because for me to say that is the same as if I was to say all Christians are like the Westboro Baptist Church. No, they're not. I can't even say it with a straight face, right? Because it's not true. Same thing. And I started to come to that realization.
And there was one particular family that took you in, Saber Bibi Barami, and they are with us today. And Bibi, if you don't mind, can I invite you to come up and join us again? Would you welcome Bibi Barami? Thanks, man. Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to sit right between them here. Perfect. No, I'm going to sit here. You sit here. I'll be between you guys. Bibi, thank you. And I want to ask you again, if you would, what was your first impression of Mac when you saw him? What did you think?
Good morning to all of you. Thank you so much for having me. The first impression was, I didn't want to say redneck like my husband, but I know when he first came to the house, he said, this guy came to the Islamic Center. We kind of comforted him, but he was concerned. His face was red, and he was like full of angers and stuff. Then I said, I'd like to meet this guy. And then when I met him the next time he was there at the library, I just said, you know, hi, how are you? Welcome to the center. And very basic, you know, just with respect. And that was my first reactions. As I say, you know, he looked scary, but I mean, what we have heard, one thing I wanted to kind of remind all of us, especially after 9/11, how Islam was constantly bombarded and terrorists, Muslim, our children are crying, say, how is going to be our future? You know, as a majority, a civilized country, we get scared of some of these people. Like he said, he saw a woman in Walmart and maybe she has a bomb with her because she's covered. If you guys are scared that much, the minority of those poor people who are here, they're double and triple scared. And obviously the way he looked scary to a lot of people in the center.
So he did. He looked scary. Yes. You would have had a reason to be on edge, but you welcomed him. And as I said last service, you didn't just invite him to have a donut. You welcomed him into your home. You treated him like family because of your faith?
Yes. Yeah, totally blessed, I think. I say briefly, I'll talk about, I was blessed to be raised in a family. My father had a home for homeless. They could stay there temporarily, and I would always be eager to deliver food, even at night. And being growing up there, and then also lived in a refugee camp for 6 years, also helping and serving people. I even learned how to start IV and shots and stuff from my father's talent. And Then even coming to beautiful Muncie, Indiana, I also took it up. This is my home, as actually my home forever, and serving people, all kinds of people coming to community, and I have many dinners like this. And I think that's what gave me that courage. It's my faith. My father very strong in his religion and how we were brought up. And this welcoming to our home, like even some of the Muslim people told me, weren't you scared? I would not do that. I said, I didn't even think about it. It was this way of life for me and just as respecting as human. And I wanted to know more about him. And that's why I invited him over for dinner. We had dinner, and that was the time I asked him that, you know, people were scared, and I heard this rumor, is this truth? That was the time he shared the story with all of us who were invited for the dinner, and everybody got comfortable, and they had a chance to know him and talk to him, and I got a chance to know him and talk to him. And I think that's what it took. It was not just only that one invitation, that continuously, like, mentoring and supportive, as a family for him in the center. Other people got comfortable with him. He served people. I'll tell him sometime to stand outside when we have monthly dinner to welcome people, to help people, so that people get comfortable with him. And then eventually even got him involved with the leadership. It was a truly blessing experience.
And he liked your cooking, didn't he?
I think he gained some weight.
I tell people, I used to weigh 190 pounds before I went to BB's house. Just saying, man.
Well, I just think, maybe I'm misspeaking. I didn't serve in the military, certainly not in a combat situation. But I would believe that kind of courage right there is as close to the battlefield as you can get.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Welcome somebody where all of your senses would say, this is a dangerous person. And you receive him anyway because of what your faith and what your family has taught you about how you treat guests. And then you find out he was plotting to do something devastating, and you ask him about that, you still welcome him. Share about what that moment was like.
Yeah, that's what I say. I think forgiveness is a huge part of our faith, obviously. And knowing that humans, knowing the history, we are very weak. Only God is perfect. We all make mistakes. And the way I could even see in him at that point, how much he was impacted by the people's welcoming and their kindness. And the way, like when I told him, is this true? And he put his head down. And I could just see in him, I see the vulnerability in the things in him that he was embarrassed. He was feeling bad about it. As he told his story that even when he was shooting, he told me he was killing many people. I said, no, he's not talking about it because it hurts me. That's why I give up news. In spite of all that, that he had that kind of, that feeling in him, it really touched me. And I, you know, like I was even more willing to talk to him and mentor him, like, you know.
You knew it was genuine,
his
remorse.
Yeah, the way he was responding to me, he was feeling bad. Automatically, that forgiveness comes when somebody is feeling that way. And forgiveness is a big part of our faith too, Islam.
So what did all of this do to you? What you're Muslim now.
Yeah. You know, it was a personal journey. You know, the overall, with me getting out of the hatred, really, me becoming a Muslim had nothing. It was a personal journey between me and God. It really had nothing to do with anything else. But it was something. It brought back my humanity. It is something that, you know, I made a joke with in the last service that, you know, I had humanity, and I went to sick bay and they gave me some medicine and I got rid of it, right? So I was able to do my job better. But they brought it back to me. They gave it back. And it was so impactful. It took over my life. And so that's what I do now. I feel my destiny now is to deliver a message of anti-hate, of love. You know, not biased to one particular faith, because that has nothing to do with it. Well, I shouldn't really say that. It does. Faith does have a lot to do with it. I take that back. But it's not that I'm out there preaching Islam, or I'm preaching Christianity or Judaism or whatever. I'm preaching about people giving people an opportunity.
Yeah.
Understanding. I had started a company actually called From Hate to Understanding. I go out and I speak now. That's what I do. That's my job.
I want to say a word about that, because there might be some here, some people who are listening going, this is wonderful. I just wish they were Christian. I just wish it was Christians up there sharing the story. But I believe, as Christians, when we see the values of Jesus, of love and acceptance being shown, what it means to be people of faith is to recognize it and to claim it and give thanks for it. A young woman named Jordan Denari Duffner, who's a granddaughter of a member of St. Luke's, wrote a book some years back called Finding Jesus Among Muslims, How Loving Islam Makes Me a Better Catholic. It's a great book. I apologize for not having a picture to show you. You can get this on Amazon, on christianbook.com. It is an excellent book about being in dialogue with Muslims and what we can understand about each other. She tells a simple story about a French priest who in the 1990s lived in Algeria and had a friendship with a Muslim named Muhammad. And the analogy that they used for talking about their dialogues about faith was digging a well. And it says, one day the French priest asked Muhammad whether they would find Christian water or Muslim water at the bottom of the well. Muhammad answered that the water didn't belong to either faith group. Rather, he said, the water they would find together is God's. And I like to think that when we engage with people and learn about each other, our own faith grows and flourishes. So I'm just very, very grateful for you both being willing to be here and share your story. You're doing this now a lot. What do you hope people will feel or experience as you share about this story?
I think, we are totally blessed. I mean, sometimes I hear from people like, oh, Allah is their God and God is ours, and we're all created by God, and we are brought to this world to know one another and to help one another, to support one another in difficulties. By saying that, I think this message was very dear to my heart, my husband's heart. And after 9/11, we have done many services and work with the interfaith group and community and churches. And this message was so dear. And I said, okay, when we got to this level, I had no idea this will go this far. I mean, I have never knew what Oscar was or what movies were. I was just busy with my own work. And then I hear that the 75,000 teachers are making this as a curriculum. Mm. And to be honest with you, I mean, went to Oscar, but it makes me so grateful. Nice. To my human race, who saw the importance in this message, and who are not only just using it to show it, they are making it part of the curriculum, who saw the importance, who voted on this and got to the Oscar. It makes us hopeful. It, in spite of what's happening, the small percentage are dividing us, are causing us negativity. Like my dear brother, he was one of the small percentage, but anyway, now he's my brother, he's my family. God brought us together, and we are all brothers and sisters in humanity, and we hope that this message reaches more people, and even for one person learn from this, to say hi and smile to somebody stranger, that will be worth it to me personally.
That's wonderful. Mac, how about for you? What do you hope people will get out of it?
I just want to make people think. That's really it. Because changing someone, that has nothing to do with me. That's between you and God. I can't change anybody. But what I can do is I can make you think. And that's what I hope to do. And that's what I hope to do through my travels and my speaking. I now have a website. It's called FromHateToUnderstanding.net. And this is what I do. People tell me about how they want to be successful and how they want to succeed in life, you know, but they're not really sure how to do it, and they're not really sure if they want to put in the work. I tell them, if you want to be as bright as the sun, you got to burn like the sun. You got to put that effort in, man. Because if you do what you've always done, you will always be where you've always been. That is a guarantee. Guarantee. We have to change society for us. You know, our famous documents say, we the people, right? My question is, where's the people? What are we doing? You know, I hear a lot that it's not my problem. It's true, today it probably isn't your problem. Mm. But tomorrow it may be. 9/11 proved that. 9/11 proved that in a hard way. I usually close out saying that a long time ago, a very wise man once said something that will live in history forever. I have a dream. Beautiful. We all should have that dream. But I have a plan, and it starts with a smile and a conversation. Thank you.
That's awesome. We'll stand, and we'll stay standing. Let's stay standing. If we prayed in true Islamic fashion, I would get down on the floor with my knees bent, but I just had knee replacement surgery. So if you're so comfortable, could we join hands? And if you are so comfortable, I invite you to join hands with somebody. And if holding hands is still a little wigs you out, maybe just put an elbow out there. Just touch an elbow. But it's a symbol and a sign that we are made to be interconnected, not isolated. We need each other in this world. So let us pray. Loving and gracious and good God, thank you for your beloved servants who are allowing their story of hate, of fear, of hospitality, of love and faith to be told to many. May that story continue to reach and impact people in a broken and a divided world where hate holds much too great a sway. And may the peace that you want for your world, your shalom, your healing, your grace, continue to work not only through these two servants, but each of us. Bless us and inspire us to be instruments of hope, to let people know and go out of our way to let them know that we are glad that they are around us, that we welcome them, that we mean no harm to anyone. Use us for that good and for your hope. We pray to you, our great and mighty God. Amen. Would you thank them once again for being with us today?